All right, here we go. Good start on the last half of the read. Okay. This is always my favorite part. So grab a seat and get comfortable there, because we got a lot of players here tonight. Everybody's a player. Again, the rules are simple here. Anybody that reads. All right, please, I said keep it short. Laura, no more than two pages. Laura Maria.
A sharp, B sharp, C sharp. She does not play the harp. Give her the right reed and the beauty of the clarinet. She will rightly be indeed. For each note and chord she plays makes for a heavenly day. A flat, B flat, C flat. Her music is not flat. For it is her delight to be playing in the right key. Whether the majors are C, A, or G, in harmony she will be. If she plays the keys and rings at night, you may hear a dance just right. When she holds the keys for a trill, your dancing will be a thrill. Whether A, B flat, E flat, German or French, in your heart, her music will entrench. Benny Shirley does inspire, that swing lights a fire, and you have her aspire to the heights of Goodman's fire. To hear the clarinet's finesse is a dance of such happiness. Play me that melody that makes you want to be dreaming of that tomorrow, so that there is no sorrow and all our days are heavenly to share our lives so lovingly. From O Solo Mio to Ave Maria to the classics of Ophelia and Evita, dreaming plays from our hearts so that heaven above is a part of our angelic melody that you will surely agree. The sweetness of her breath across the tiny reeds brings sounds of harmony with an angel's good deeds. She brings peace, love, and grace to the hearts adorned with fine lace.
Oh, wow, thank you. Thank you very much. That was nice. Let me see what we got here. It looks like Christopher Ferreira? Chris. Chris, where you at? Oh, come on up here. How do you say your last name?
Ferrier.
Ferrier. That's not my fault. You can't blame me.
Okay. I'm Chris Ferrier, and my first poem is called Signs of Desire. First is the glance. Eyes meet, eyes retreat. Did he, did she see me? Second is the look. Is she, is he looking back? Third is the spark, the electric tingle. Did he, did she feel that promise of the fire? Fourth is the decision. Should she, should he say hello? Make a witty remark. Fifth is the response. Did he, did she sound like an idiot with that lame reply? Sixth sign of desire is the connection. She did, he did, give a phone number. Make a date, make a plan. As for the sex, they'll get around to it. They always do. That's number two or 22, whenever. And this is called Language Death. When Herman Holbrook died, a language died. He was the last speaker of Washoe, of words now silent forever. How empty his world was when no one spoke his language? As the last speaker, did he walk alone talking to himself? Did he wander streets thinking in a language he had never heard spoken? When a language is lost, the heritage of a people is lost. The heart of a culture is lost. A worldview is lost. In the age of dying languages, lost to cell phones and mass media, will anyone remember Washoe? And another language dies every 2 weeks.
Nancy Esther James.
Yes, I referred.
Let's get this down.
Okay. Ah, this seems pretty good. Okay. All right. The title of this poem is the first line. This old sofa, its wooden frame, bursting floral fabric, cat-clawed, stained by coffee or causes unknown, faces a window, a view, a city park where blossoms, pink, white, live and die, where crab apples ripen, drop, where life not rooted lopes by on four legs, runs, paces on two, flickers golden in a pond, twitches a gray tail, or caws on black wings. Viewed from this sofa, its pillows threadbare, their braid missing, embroidery fraying, a young maple tree again and again bends limbs under snow, springs up, breathes out yellow blossoms, then green waving hands, till they redden at rims, wrinkle, give way to yet another snow, another melting sun. Thank you.
Jean Hirsch, where you at? Come on, everybody.
All right.
Thanks. I just have one short poem. It's about a man who has Alzheimer's disease, and the travails of his wife. King of distant winds, I hold your hands in mine. You wince and stretch back, bewildered into childhood. In that instant, from the vision of my eye, I see you so quickly growing more alone, logged by the tears that creep through your mortar, your lath, the trenchant paths inside your bones. Do you remember my name, the one who loves you, fends off the foreign spells that drop through your brittle shell to prey on your mind? I hold your face near mine, but you leap aghast. Your phantoms urge you to thrash, to make of me the beast that haunts you. The sun sets behind the silhouette of the chimney, and you walk about down the stairs and into the night, unknowing. Unknowing, you are the king of distant whims, while you dream your fusion flights. The cherry box within me sings its secrets from the sweetness of our forgotten past.
Jane, thank you very much. Charlie Bryce, where you at?
All right, thanks. This is called Elvis Presley Patch. Let's face it, there is no hair left on the top of my head. Even if I bought a designer mop or had a hair transplant and looked like I'd headbutted a porcupine whose quills injected fake hair follicles into my scalp, the hair that my mother and father put on my head is gone forever. It's taken 30 years for me to lose my hair. When Ariel was little, its gradual loss alarmed him. He'd grab a maculate clump close to my forehead, my Elvis Presley patch, he called it, and tug. Why couldn't it spread to the bald spots, he wanted to know. You can have some of my hair, Daddy, he offered, not yet bound to rationalization. I'd thank him, then tickle and hold him down until he said, Forgiveness, Holy Father, Papal Emissary, a fallen Catholic's rendition of Say Uncle. I write this to my friend Sharon, whose hair has just fallen out in the shower all at once. She thought maybe it wouldn't happen to her, but it did. As usual, she's positive. It means I've got powerful drugs fighting the cancer, she tells me. I bet you look like a cute little Buddha nun, I write, and failed to mention the flood of fate that shines like a nimbus in both our eyes. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie. Thank you. Stuart Shepherd, where you at?
Right here.
Oh, there you are.
Thank you very much. I went swimming today, and I can't hear a thing. So if it's okay with you, I'd just like to mime my poem. Is that... Thank you. Good. This has got to be the toughest place to read in the world. It is a challenge. Anyway, this is called A Higher Perspective. The first night at altitude, the angels abandoned him. Later, when he brought it up, they said, "You were pretty upset, weren't you?" He had spent the night vomiting up his soul year by year until he ran out of memories and the expedition leader crawled into his tent to check his pulse and called the Sherpas to carry him back down to the landing strip. His one act of existence left was to lift the tent flap each time so he didn't suffocate in it. And each time he would be amazed that it had disappeared. He thought he must be delirious, but eventually the growls a few feet away told him that it was the mountain dogs, like some atavistic self-cleaning oven. Finally, he kept the medicine down and the Sherpas were called off. He staggered out into the feral dawn towards the dining tent, feeling eviscerated but joyous to still be there. Again, he demanded, "Why did you abandon me?" And in that smug way that angels have, they said, "Who do you think sent the dogs?" Thanks.
That's pretty cool. Thank you. Ken Egler?
Yeah. Well, it'll prevent you guys from seeing my hands shake, so.
Okay, this poem is called Leaving the Garden. At midnight, an old man plants petunias in his garden. He plants at night because he's lonely, and the man in the moon keeps him company. Crawling in the soil of bluegill and spare chains, things thrown back are lost. He begins to rise, but his knees won't respond. Instead, they crack like ice. They burn and spit knives at the man in the moon. Junkyard dogs sing the blues. Wake up, knees, he screams. They respond, we've had enough of this. You're too old to plant petunias in your garden. The old man slaps them repeatedly. I'll teach you to stop working on me. He continues slapping. His arms fall off. He starts kicking his arms. But as he's kicking his arms, his legs go limp. Naturally, he begins biting and chewing on his legs. Good for nothing legs. I wish to hell I could leave this garden, he screams. His teeth fall out. Have you ever seen how an inchworm moves? His body tills the soil, and the tulips tremble, and his limp legs reap roses. The petunias cry, you're killing us. But the old man can't hear, for his ears have stopped working. Yet he hears a voice within his head. I'm getting out of here. This is madness, it says. The old man's bald head lifts open like a tomato soup can, and red and blue veined vines reach out, curling around his ears and winding like a toe winch. His brain rolls down his face and falls into the soil of bluegill and spare change. It rolls out of the garden, stops to brush off its feet on the welcome mat, and begins walking into the living room. It pours itself a glass of water, takes two yellow aspirin, grabs the old man's hat and coat, walks out the front door, leaving the door open. The old man rests motionless in the garden. The man in the moon asks the morning dew to shut and kiss his eyelids. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Just sing one out again. Yeah, Mega Pie.
Oh, it's out here.
Okay, come on.
I ran to my apartment and got my poems.
Oh, all right. Yeah. My kind of girl. All right, Mega, talk to her.
Next time, score
one
above.
I didn't expect to read today, so I didn't bring any, but I'll bring them everywhere.
Tell her the rules.
What? One or two pages? Okay. Hi, I'm Mega. I graduated from Pitt Greensburg a year ago. I had Lori, Jaquila, and Judy Vollmer as professors, and I'm going to read one or two pages, so probably two poems today. In the fall, I was published in Lexicon, which is Duquesne's literary magazine, so I'll read this one. It's called Only Pearls Crash Through. Pearls fell out of clouds that spilled their jewels, prodded too long by ashy limbs of dichotomous skeletons, swaying upon the hilltop, weaving into our hair, our skin. And next poem, off the record, is about a crazy comp professor that we had who got fired. So, and if Jaquila was here, she'd know who I was talking about, but she, when I wrote this poem, she told me, just be careful if you send it in to get published, like avoid libel and slander things, but I was a law student for a year, so we learned about all that stuff, so. It's called Always Remember the Banana Peel. She'd assign 30 pages of writing worth only 10 points, then talk about doing drugs in the Bahamas with Bob Marley. And one day, she had this banana peel curled in her hand, yelling, boys and girls can never be friends. She made us watch claymation that made our eyes vomit, as Nazis and Newsies dance to her shrill cry of, "It is what it is, darlings. Remember the banana peel, but we don't fucking want to, not ever." Thank you.